Sunday with Miriam on RT Radio 1, sponsored by Travel Department. Explore the wonder of the world's most iconic sites with Travel Department, the world discovered together.
But first this morning, actor and national treasure Brendan Gleeson is here in studio. Good morning to you, Brendan.
Morning to you, Miriam. Afternoon throw like that. A bit of a national treasure yourself.
Yeah, rubbish. Yeah, but look, it's lovely to see you because even when you came in this morning, I noticed you were downstairs chatting to everyone. And I know everyone in Ireland will have their own favourite role, from Colm and the Banshees, Knuckles McGinty in Paddington 2, The Guard in Bruges, Mad-Eye Moody in Harry Potter. I could go on and on. But what always strikes me, and I saw it this morning, is you return after every role to Dublin, to home, to your family and to yourself. You're still the Brendan we all know and love.
Well, I don't know. You change. The whole thing changes. I can't do the things I used to do. But then again, I'm 70, so it's probably, you know, that was going to happen anyway. It does change the idea of being not able to browse in shops. I remember talking about it donkeys years ago. And that kind of continues. You try to hold on to the essentials. And I think I've been lucky that I've had a lot of kind people in my life. And I think, you know, I've been the recipient of a lot of just kindness over the years, enough to keep you afloat and more. And I try to stay aspirational. So if it's that, I think, and try to see, try to believe the better in people before I get evidence to the contrary. Now, I'm not nice when I find evidence to the contrary. But I do believe that most people aspire to being part of a goodness within the world. And so I do try to hold on to that. And sometimes I get it from my kids. I got it from my parents. I'm lucky in that regard. You siphon friends throughout the years that will continually be it that way. And so it's very easy to stay kind of with a certain equilibrium when you've that support. Mm. So I feel grateful that I'm allowed to recognise myself or the better part of myself every so often. And I mean, to be honest with you, there's bits that have gone to the dogs. Seriously, like, you know, I do
you become look good.
I do get grumpy and I go down rabbit holes and I'm cribbing about stuff and you're trying to get to the point for about 2.5 hours, as I am now, and all of that stuff, and you try, but it's trying to keep the negativity at bay is the big thing. And the reason I'm here today, and the reason I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to be here, is to push the thing with the hospice in Raheny, and they're building a new extension. They're going to have 24 bed units. It's going to be wonderful because some of the mixed units, some of where you had 4 bed units before, my dad was in one of those, and it was wonderful care and everything that he was given, but it was a little awkward. And the hospice are these group of people who continually want to improve and make things even better. There's no cost cutting. There's no saying we'll have to retrench because these are whatever times. Mm-hmm. It's always about, let's make it even better. They're going to have facilities for more people over the next few years because the population is going to be, you know, need it. And they're going, not only that, but to have better facilities, not just more, better. Mm-hmm. And these are one of a bunch of people that I've been talking about helping you keep some equilibrium in the world when you see the extraordinary goodness that's involved in what these people are doing. You know, it's about death, it's about grief, it's about leaving go, it's about passing on. And all you see in this place is kindness and the notion of life as being a precious thing, but something of which death is a part. And you learn how to live with it. And so that's really why I'm here, is to push this thing. I want people to go and buy a brick. You can buy a virtual brick. I'm going to flog it. I don't care.
Go
it's
for it.
SFH.ie, St. Francis Hospice.ie is the thing. It's very, very easy. I have my phone here somewhere with the phone number on it as well. And you can actually kind of ring, which is always, you know, a great gift in my book.
Because sometimes I have the number as well.
Yeah,
Brendan.
It's
01832 7535.
There you go. That's it.
And I'll give it again.
No, I know you will. Thanks. But I just wanted to get it out that you can actually ring if you're befuddled by computers and stuff like that. It's 25 quid a shot. And here's the thing that you can do with it. I mean, it's not original, I don't think. I think other people have used fundraising things like that, buy a brick. It's a virtual wall. But what you can do with the brick that you buy, 25 quid a shot, or you can do 100 or 250 or a curling or a whole load of other options. But I think 25 quid is kind of doable. And you can put something on it, maybe just a name of somebody you've lost. Mm-hmm. Maybe just a thanks to the staff of the hospice. Maybe just something that they said. And it's like, here's this social media thing where you get to put something positive and beautiful and give a gift of even just somebody's name. And that's what you get for 25 quid. I think it's just, if people are looking around, I think they're starved of the opportunity to do small kindnesses. Because you're always a little bit afraid, you know, it's like, do you give the person on the bus a seat and then find out they're not pregnant? Or, you know... There's a certain defensiveness about how people extend kindnesses. And here's an opportunity to do something just on your own. And it'll go on to build this new unit that will have one care and attention to detail and professionalism and allow people to grieve in a way that is natural. All of those things can be pushed forward by this. So that's my appeal. And thanks for letting me do it.
I'm delighted. And actually, you mentioned your mum and dad or your parents, how kindness, I suppose, you got it from them as well.
Yeah.
Because I suppose they both, their experience of the hospice was what, in a sense, got you involved. Would you say that?
Yeah, yeah. My mum was there for a couple of weeks and, you know, I've said it before that she said she was never creamed as much in her life since she was a baby. And that always stuck with me. But there were, you know, I just found that the natural, it was a very short time, but I saw her shoulders relax. And somebody who had been, oh, here, let me, I'll get you a cup of tea type of thing, all her life, could suddenly let go and be minded in a way that even we couldn't mind her. Mm-hmm. Because she was anxious, she was thinking about, you know, and there was the anxiety absolutely just completely drained away. I saw it physically happening. It was amazing. And I know that she... Like it was, she's like back in the womb or something. She just felt so safe in that place. And then my dad was there for a long time. He kept wandering in and out of, you know, being close to death and not, and hanging in and all that kind of stuff. But it was just like what I saw over there, and the way it was just every single day, hard, hard work, like volunteers coming in, hard, hard work, doing hours, caring for anybody. It's very, very hard. Anybody who's ever tried to do it, it's kind of relentlessly dull if you allow it to be, or if that's your lot, and repetitive and all that. And these people are coming in, volunteers. Mm-hmm. Volunteers are coming in. And the people who are working there, the professionalism is extraordinary. But, I mean, diligence. They work really, really hard. And that's a constant every day. You're looking at excellence. Mm-hmm. And, like, I've been lucky enough in my profession to go and see things at a fairly high level, say, on movie sets and stuff. We see brilliant people. Just talking earlier about, you know, a sound man. I opened up the glove compartment of a car one day when we were on a shoot, and it was a face looking out at me. The sound guy had crawled in through the back of the engine somewhere, but they weren't paying attention to the work. I wasn't supposed to open up the glove compartment. But you see excellence all the time, and these people who are just quietly brilliant at what they do and creative. Mm. And I go into the hospital, see exactly the same thing. In an everyday thing, at a kind of a fact of life where people have to be cared for, particularly aging population and all that, like, this is not going to get any easier. It's hard. And then you watch people and the sense of humour that's there, and I don't know, there's an ebullience about them in there. It's just, and nothing gets in the way. You know, everybody can get cranky or get fed up or tired or... But nothing gets the way of mind, and it's always the patients, always the people who are there. And I find it extraordinarily inspirational, you know, and you kind of think right across. And I got myself, you know, into a heap over the health, and we know there's health in the health services, all sorts of issues. But some of the people that are working within the health service are exactly the same. A lot of the people that are working in there, and it's the systems need to be rearranged. But the actual goodness that's been performed, like, actually sort of just executed right across the board. I kind of feel at this point we need to start invigorating people and allowing people to see there's an awful lot of good going on in the world, and that people basically are amazing. You know, people are amazing in terms of what they're prepared to do for each other, or just as their nature to be generous. And we know all the other stuff, but we're getting it so relentlessly that, you know, I mean, this all started about, do you stay yourself? I do find it hard to stay myself at times with the degree of appalling sort of negativity that's been thrown at you. And then the way it's couched in, you know, the amount of hate that's coming down the tubes at everybody. I think it's really important to start standing up now and allowing the light in a small bit.
Yeah, and you were saying that even, I noticed at the launch the other day at the hospice that, you know, especially for young people, because if they relentlessly only believe there's bad in the world and everyone's bad to each other, it gets into their souls.
Yeah, it's a tough one because, if you're looking at the apocalyptic feelings that are around with climate and everything else, you're an idiot if you don't want to engage with it and see that it is a problem and that has to be dealt with. And not only is it a problem, but, you know, it's a kind of a crisis. But there has to be an antidote to that. Like, there's no point in fretting through your whole life about losing your life if you're not going to have anything that's worth losing. You know, you've got to live your life. You've got to embrace the beauty that is life. You've got to embrace the beauty that's left to us still. You know what I mean? Like, going around today, like, whatever way the weather has been this year, like, the place is absolutely bouncing in terms of the beauty of nature and everything that's in full bloom around the place. And you're looking at people and you're seeing a lot of smiling faces, you know. And, you know, you were talking about before we started about, like, people deliberately not watching the news, and I suppose it'll be Donny as well. Donny's very interesting. I always find Donny very interesting in what he's doing. He's one of the few people on American television that actually goes and talks to people as people. As people, not as you know, demographic sort of entities, but actually says, why would you think this about whatever the situation is, and why would you do, trying to get at what's actually going on with people, you know what I mean? I just think it's important to re-embrace the nature of what the human species is. And for me, and again, I've been lucky in my life, but I think fundamentally as a species we can be really extraordinarily beneficial to everything that's going on around if we're allowed and if we're led properly and if we're, you know, encouraged actually to look to the better side of ourselves. And I think youngsters are not getting much of a shot at it these days because it is kind of, everything seems to be snarling.
Yeah, that's so true. Your mum and dad, did you get a lot of your kindness from them? What were they like, actually?
They were great. Mum was great. She was a great storyteller. She was a bouncer, you know, and she'd go in and say hello to everybody in the room. Like, you'd be embarrassed, like, as kids and stuff. She'd go into a doctor's thing and, oh, hello, hello. And she'd start the chat and kind of insisted on it. Like, it wasn't that she was nosy or pokey. She didn't gossip, not much anyway, not in a malignant way. But it was, like, genuinely interested in people. And people did brighten up around her. Like, I used to see it. People would brighten up and people then would respond. And she'd be laughing about, you know, what people would say to her. There was casual conversation going on. My dad was now was quieter, more taciturn. He'd, you know, but he'd go down, he'd work for the Vincent de Paul on a Friday night, you know what I mean, after coming back, and he'd be wrecked from work and stuff like that. But he would go out. He was a giver as well. And his religion was more fear-based and more, I found it a little bit more fundamentalist and stuff. We would have had our kind of differences about all that stuff. Whereas my mother was very much about a smiling, gentle face of Jesus looking out of, you know, from the Sacred Heart. She always had a very good looking Jesus there, that had been, you know, that was kind looking. But they were kind people, and they were, and it definitely does, you know, it definitely rubs off. It has to have an impact, because you kind of feel, no, things are, it's okay, it's good. Like, I do really feel sorry for people who don't see that when they're growing up or don't get enough of it. Because I, how do you know then? How do you know that there is this reciprocal thing that's possible, you know?
And you and Mary, your wife, clearly gave that to your four boys, because everyone says, but chips off the old block, that they're decent and well-rounded human beings and nice.
Oh, well, I love them to bits and I'm really proud of them. And mostly, like, you know, I've seen them, like, there's two of them now, little new additions, and it's just wonderful to see a son, your son, turn into a father. It's just, there's something beautiful, and like the lads, I've seen them look after my father. You know, when Dad was staying with us for a little bit, all four of them were part of his minding. And I think, you know, Mary was just saying she often thought it was one of the great things that happened, because it unburdened them of the fear of any of that stuff. They just went up and it was their granddad and they loved him, and they'd be codding around with him and all that. But they would, they'd put him to bed and they'd do the dirty work that had to be done. And they're all four of them have, yeah, good, beautiful souls, beautiful sort of hearts. And I'm really proud of that more than anything else, of just the fact that, you know, it's like Fergus at one stage said, Grandma's thing is living on a little bit. And it was he said it to me by way of saying, relax, you know. And I took it as possibly one of the biggest compliments I ever had, that continuing the legacy was going through. But I can see it, my lads, like, you know, they're all kind people. And I know that they will have to suffer and guard that, because you have to be tough enough to withstand what's going to come at you. Like, open up your heart is not an easy thing to do. It feels natural at the beginning until you get a few hidings, and then it becomes easy to kind of close it down. In fact, it becomes necessary to sort of start building a few defences around it. And so you have to learn to be tough enough to withstand what's coming at you. And I would have always hopefully encouraged them as well to build up enough resources to guard against what's coming down the pipe at you, because you will get, you get in trouble, and you'll be slightly exposed in a way that will make you the best type of friends, but ultimately leave you open to an awful hiding from people who want to take advantage of it, and there will be people who do. So it's always a balance. You guard what's soft in underneath, but you keep it soft if you can. But you have to harden up outside to make sure that it's guarded. But yeah, I'm very proud of them. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah, well, you've both done a great job. That's all you want to do, is bring your kids up to be happy, kind people, and you and Mary have done that. Listen, you're going into the Weir. Starting rehearsals tomorrow. Conor McPherson's great play.
Yeah, it's a brilliant play. And like, I had seen it before. Brian was in it before. and it was funny because I think it's my time of life or something, but I haven't done anything since the Walworths with the lads in 2014, I think that was. That's 11 years nearly on stage. And I was sent it and I read it. And this time at this point of whatever I'm at, it just blew me away. And part of it had to do with, again, people oddly in the course of the play examine the worst side of themselves in a way, reveal it, and then choose to go a kinder route. And there is beauty and truth. So sometimes you have to face the ugliness of what you've done in your life, or what has happened in your life, and or the horrible nature of how life can be cruel, in order to kind of come through. But there's a kind of a choice I felt this time, again, maybe it's just a zeitgeist in my own life, that there was a choosing of the better side of ourselves. And I think that's a constant process. You have to continue to do it. And I just the thoughts of doing it, where people, you know, you bring people through this journey of watching other people make the difficult decision to choose the better part of themselves. I thought it was just really beautiful.
It's a beautiful piece of work.
Yeah.
would you find that now, you start tomorrow, do you approach it differently than when you're on, say, a movie set in Los Angeles, which we spoke about before we went on air? I mean, is it a very different process of preparing yourself to be in a play on stage?
It is, yeah. And I had gotten used to, I'm lucky at the moment, my cognitive powers are enough to, like a good cogger's brain, I can kind of learn stuff the night before and it'll kind of hang in.
Love it.
Yeah, I know. not a cogger's brain so much as a crammer's brain, that's it. But Yeah, I am starting to get worried about just the actual retention of that degree amount of lines. You know, there are a couple of long speeches, and I had said I did something in Atlanta before I came home this time, and I was utterly wasted at the end of it. I hadn't got any brain power to even start looking at the fresh challenge until last week. Mm. And when I looked at last week and I started actively actually trying to say, okay, I should have maybe a look at this. It's a big challenge, and it's going to be, I'll be very nervous in one way just until I get the first couple of previews behind. But it's a different process and a different experience, because you can renegotiate it every night. You know, once you get the movie done, you can renegotiate it on the day, and then you can revisit during the edit. But ultimately, that's it. Whereas with a play, sometimes it has an organic sort of nature. It can actually develop during performances as well, and through the run. So it'll be fascinating to see where all that goes.
But I also can see your enthusiasm still for it. Like, in other words, you've been acting for a while.
Yeah.
But you seem to still love it.
I do. I'm afraid. And like, I'm going to take a big break next year. I actually am wasted this year. I kind of feel I took on too much. But I'm working with John McGinley, you know. I love working with John McGinley.
He's
you know,
great.
And with Tom Vodaller, you know, and Owen.
We had
Dan
them in here recently about it, yeah.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Oh, great. So it's like, you know, that's going to, and Connor himself is going to direct it. So, like, the whole setup is there where I can't wait to work with the lads, and you know. And so I just have to get back to swatting. That's it. I just have to get down to swats. The work comes in now. That's it.
And actually, one thing you said before we went in there, and you kind of wanted to mention it, so I'm reminding you, is that on Facebook, you noticed that people may be flogging things in your name.
Yeah, no, I got two text messages over the weekend from kind of friends of years ago, you know, from year one from that I was at school with, and another lad that I used to pal out that I saw actually at the 70th, he's a lovely, great friend of mine down in Waterford. And just send me a thing that was on Facebook about me apparently talking about, you know, I don't know, I was trying to remember there was a clip of, was it the Iranian parliament or somebody clattering another fella, and I'd gone mad over these pharmaceutical executives and was beating the life out of them, that they were all robbers, but that I had had arthritis and that they were trying to stop Luke O'Neill of all people. Who had come up with this genius pill thing. And I suddenly thought, this, well, I didn't think it was all that funny. I thought the start of it, I said, I don't know, what are they sending me this for? Like, whatever, if it's a joke. But it turned out, at least, I'm a little bit of afraid, because I'm not sure if it is or not. I wasn't going to start pressing it, and I'm not on Facebook. But there was a thing about press this if you want to get this cure for arthritis, and that I seem to be flogging it. Now, I think you had the same problem a couple of years ago. Mm. I just want to tell people now, I don't flog any ointments or any things to cure arthritis or anything else. The hospice is the only thing that I push out. And it's the only thing that I push out. So, like, the amount of disinformation and stuff like that, I'm a complete novice at what can happen. I don't really care because I'm not on those things.
Yeah.
But I don't want anybody falling foul of thinking that I had an issue that was solved by something that you press a link and suddenly you're getting scammed. So that's it.
It's not you selling those pills.
No.
Now, look, I know you've been asked a lot about the recent success of other Irish actors, and in many ways you helped Colin and Killian and Saoirse and Jesse and Barry and many more just by you pushing through first. But I was just curious, who did that for you?
Gabriel Byrne.
Fantastic.
Yeah. No, yeah. Gabriel Byrne was the one, because he was a teacher for a couple of months or a year or something like that. And then he went, and I think he bypassed London and went straight over to America. I think Áine O'Connor has probably a lot to do with that. And Terry Hayden, of course, who we lost last year, who I missed terribly. But I just found him, I just thought he always seemed to maintain his composure and his central self in a way that I found, you know, he just stayed the same, Gabriel. He was always had that dry wit, and I didn't know him. So I looked up to him a lot. And I mean, I've had the great thrill of being able to tell him so. So he, you know, and of course Liam started and things like that. But it was really Gabriel for me I said, okay, you don't have to lose anything necessarily in the transfer of just going for an ambition to actually work with really good people. And it was always about that. Like, he didn't want to be a star or any of this sort of rubbish either. No. It was about how do you get to work with good people, you know? And there's so much price that is extracted for that. Like, all the actual process is what gets me down at the moment. But you get into a place where I've worked with extraordinary people, and that's why, like, your work becomes extraordinary because you're working with extraordinary people. Mm. You know, that's just it. So there were precursors, and of course Richard Harris and all those guys did it before that again. But for me, it was Gabriel. I thought, yeah, Gabriel seemed very, he was a couple of years ahead of me, but not much. And that he kind of would have inspired me.
And always very giving, Gabriel. In other words, he wasn't jealous. He wasn't worried you were going to be as big as you were. He was just always there for people. I've seen it in him.
No, he's just decent and really wry sense of humour that a lot of people don't, you know, this brooding sort of thing. It's just he's so dry. It's really, really funny. And, you know, lovely man. I remember coming across Anthony Hopkins on something we were doing, Beowulf or something. He was dressed in a leotard. It was very mortifying. But there was Anthony Hopkins dressed in another one, and it was like a smaller one, and it was like he was just a chatty fella, and I'm kind of so different from his screen persona. He was Welsh chatty. I just found that brilliant, you know. And the more you work with a lot of the great people, the better you find. Like, there are a lot of people who are that star thing that's slightly different, but these people had this luster. But we're really, really sort of just down to earth in between. It's really refreshing when you come across it.
Vani, before I let you go, and I'm going to give the number out again, by the way, for the hospice campaign, is do you sometimes wake up, pinch yourself and think, God, I'm having a good life. It's gone well. It's gone better than I ever thought it would.
I didn't expect now that in terms of the amount of work that I'd get to do and all that. I definitely do and definitely feel, you know, that it's kind of bizarre. Honestly, the gift I feel is the family, you know, I really do, you know, and even, you know, my brothers and stuff like that are all a part of something that was ultimately quite honourable. And I've a lot, of, I kind of thrived when I could look up to people. I had a Christian brother in school who was particularly brilliant, Pat Grogan, and had us up on stage doing all sorts of stuff. And I like having a bit of mentorship. John Boorman was a great mentor in film and he taught me more. And I was a willing student. Like, I wanted to find out. But I think, I do feel blessed in that way. I was lucky enough to come across good mentorship all along the way and pin my colours to, you know, certain people who embodied the values that I wanted to maintain or that I want to achieve or aspire to. So the fact that I got to meet those people even, and become part of a brief part of their world for a while. That's been extraordinary. Like, it really has.
Well, it's so well deserved. I love chatting to you, Brendan. And actually, Donny O'Sullivan's coming in next. He loves you too. Right. He's never met you, actually. No. So he says, Miriam, Deirdre, I have to get a picture with Brendan. So we're going to do it.
He's great. No, fair play to him. As I say, he's a bit of a beacon now, because one of the things I noticed in America is the divisiveness, and I really hope we can fight it here. I think we have so far, but it's really important that RTE stays as an honest broker. That's just something I wanted to say about that whole thing where people are spreading lies like AI now, and like I was saying this stuff, like my voice wasn't right, but in that kind of Facebook thing. But anything can be passed off as fact now. It's really, really worrying. Mm. And I think the money is one thing. And, you know, there was a fat had to, you know, to be sort of trimmed and stuff in RTE. But the idea that we actually have a station where there's an honest broker, and if they're not, they can be held to account, is really, really important. And I think people like, don't let the commercial end of things run away with this. It's much more important that we have somewhere to go where we can have a public forum and talk about things that are important to the nation as a whole, no matter what, if different sides of political spectrum, but that we don't get divided like it's happening. It's not nice in America at the moment. People cannot talk to each other in a way that's reasonable without all the time being goaded into a, they don't. Americans are, Donny will tell you how lovely they are, you know, as a broad sweep of people. How they're at each other's throats like this has been orchestrated, and some of it is unfortunate with algorithms, but some of it has been orchestrated. And we really need to try and stop it now here, because what we have here is absolutely precious.
Okay, Brendan, look, thanks so much.
Yes.
Love speaking to you. All the information on the St. Francis Hospice Buy a Brick campaign, which you are supporting and fronting, is on their website, which is sfh.ie, or anyone can phone them on 01 832 7535. That's 832 7535. And the Weir, of course, is in the Three Olympia from the 8th of August to the 6th of September. Then it moves to London's West End and to the Harold Pinter Theatre from the 12th of September to the 6th of December. Stay being brilliant, Brendan. Thanks for being my guest.
Thanks a million, Miriam. Thank
Remind
you.
Mind yourself. We'll take a break.